Coming up, ready for some serious business? Well, Leslie Kaplan is on deck with her new guidebook that can help you build and brand your biz. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Dean. And if you like to read a variety of books with authentic Jewish values, we read you loud and clear. It's authentically Jewish to provide an honest parnassa for our family, our household, and our future. And my guest on this episode of 613 Books Podcast is Leslie Kaplan, a business strategy, branding, and goal-achieving coach, as well as an organizational consultant and trainer. She is the author of the Small Business Success Toolbox and Guide, How to Build and Brand Your Biz. With over three decades of expertise in sales, development, branding, marketing, product creation, and running a product and service business, she has trained and coached hundreds of business owners and organizations worldwide to success. Welcome, Leslie Kaplan, to 613 Books Podcast.
Thank you so much, Heather. Great to be here.
So, Leslie, it's great to have you. I would love to know, from the writer's standpoint of this book, who is this book written for and how should the reader use it?
Okay, firstly, great question, because the topic of the book, the title is Small Business Success Toolbox and Guide. So some people think, well, only for small businesses, and what exactly is a small business? Many people that we know are solopreneurs, where they're literally running the business by themselves, or, you know, a tiny business considered up to 10 employees. This book, however, is for more than just that. It's basically aimed at, number one, veteran business owners as well as new business owners, because as we know, many people go into business without really studying the basics and knowing all the basics, and we'll get into more detail, I assume, as we go along. And they jump into a business, they suddenly create an idea, but they find that they're not really doing all their homework beforehand. So even if you've been in business for many years, this book is for you. Define it as a small to medium-sized business, or even if you are running a department in a company and you're managing and running the show and you're supervising employees or you are dealing with clients, then this book is for you. It's not only for small businesses, the traditional solopreneur, or for new businesses for that matter. Anyone that wants to be more profitable, more productive, and more effective will definitely gain from this book.
Excellent. So I would definitely like to get into it. First of all, let's talk about what happens when a person has an idea for a business that he or she thinks is a one-of-a-kind idea and sure to earn profits. Now, you give your readers an opportunity with questions that you raise and exercises to do that will get an entrepreneur thinking through their grand idea well before taking it to market. So I'm wondering if you could just please read us an excerpt from your book on this topic, starting at the bottom of page 58. It's from that chapter, What Problem Am I Solving?
Right. Okay. So with your permission, before I actually start reading it, I'd just like to say a little bit about it, is that very often people get into business, as I said earlier, because they have an idea, they're suddenly feeling excited or passionate about it, and they say, wow, just because I have this great idea, it means that it's going to hit the market and it's going to make me a ton of money. So unfortunately, as we've seen, many, many businesses fail. And I don't want to get into the statistics right now and the percentages, but unfortunately, not everyone does their groundwork before. And part of the problem is the page that you're referring to is, what problem am I solving? Okay, so we talk about the why, and that's one of our biggest, biggest things that we need to know when we start a business. And there are two aspects regarding the why. The one is, what is your why, the why of the person starting the business? Why do you want to start this business? What is this big thing called this passion that's taking you to start it? The other thing, and this is what you're referring to, is why would a client or a potential client, and that's where often people fall short too, is that they don't identify correctly their target market. Why would somebody want to buy my product or service? What problem am I solving? And I will read the paragraph that you mentioned. And it starts like this. When you had the idea of going into business, or the idea you presently have, if you're starting off now, did you have an insight regarding a gap in the market? Was it something that didn't exist at all? Did it exist, but not in a way you envisioned it? By closing the supposed gap, what exact problem are you solving? So I'm going to skip a couple of lines. And then I just want to read one thing. As a business owner or potential business owner, it is essential that you determine whether there is sufficient demand, desire, and need for your service, product, or idea to justify and create and sustain creating a business and building a product around it. So that is the main thing, is that what problem are you solving? Do you know enough about your client, and not enough just to say, yes, there's the gap in the market or a person needs my service? What do you actually know about your client? What is their problem to start before you solving their problem? What is their problem? A lot of people may not see it specifically as a problem, but any field, whether it's a coach or anything else, we need to know what our clients are thinking, what they're eating, dreaming, sleeping, everything about them, and what issues they have. Because without knowing what issues they have or how you can improve their lives, you're not going to know what their problem is and how you can solve their problem. And that's the basic when you start your business.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. I think also it does happen sometimes when a person wants someone else's business, they might think that they have the solution, but it's actually not a fitting solution for what they want. They think they have the idea of how to problem solve for that client. And sometimes, no, they might be way off. It's a two-way street, but I think it's a very important thing to soul search oneself and one's business and do exactly what you're talking about with looking into what problem are you solving. There is a term that you use throughout the book, and very frequently, it's called unique selling proposition, USP. And you make it very clear that the entrepreneur has to be crystal clear about this in order for one's business to stand out, to take the concept to market and explain it to clients. So Leslie, if you could just tell us, what is USP? And if you could give us a real world example of a well-known business that has a solid USP.
Sure. Firstly, that's a very good question. And USP is one of the words that anyone that's heard me talk about in coaching or training that I use very often, because it's a word that I'm very passionate about, unique selling proposition. So what is a USP? Basically, what makes you stand out and unique to your clients? Because if you don't stand out and you are not unique, then your client can just run to the next person and you won't stay top of mind in their world. So I'll give you a couple of examples of places that I consider, or businesses that I consider with the USP. But basically, it's tied very linkedly to the idea of creating loyal customers. Because the more authentic you are and the more your client, how they perceive you, and it's all part of your brand. And the topic of the book is Small Business Success Toolbox and Guide, how to build and brand your business. The stronger your USP is, then that means that your brand is even better recognized and people will remember you, get to know you, and will stay with you and will use you. So that's why I say it's created and related to loyalty, because as we know with many businesses, if you don't have loyal clients or loyal following, and that's basically the lifeline of a business, to be able to create and generate leads and clients and to maintain them and have loyal clients. So if you don't have a loyal following, or your USP is not strong enough, the way that the client perceives you, all part of your brand in their eyes, then they're not going to stay with you and they're not going to come back. And that is one of the things that is a crucial element on not only knowing your USP. And I'll tell you, to be honest, Heather, I work with so many clients that they actually can't even define what the USP is. They know that they wanted to start a business. They've managed to identify their target market. Some yes, some less so. But when it comes to, if I ask them, what makes you different? What makes you stand out? Why would a client only buy from you? Many of them are tongue-tied. They don't know how to answer. And we have to know what brings a client back for more, because if we don't know it ourselves and we can't verbalize it, then how on earth is the client going to know? And this is something that we need to use in an indirect way and sometimes direct way in all our marketing opportunities and all our marketing programs, whether it's social media, online, offline, because if we don't know, how is the client going to know? So to give you some examples, if you think of any particular businesses or companies where you keep going back for more. And the whole idea of a USP is that somebody's prepared to even pay more for your service or product because you've stood out so much and the way that they perceive you is so strong. Let's look at Apple, for example. I mean, that's a big company. But how many people you could get certain products for much cheaper, but you go for Apple because they've got a brand and a great brand name. Even taking it on a lower scale, certain coffee brands, anything you buy in the supermarket, or even if we look in the smaller business sense, whether it's a particular type of coach or whether it's a particular type of anything, we can really apply this to so many things. Or a lawyer, for example, or an airline, Southwest. Think of all the reasons why you keep going back to them, why a client will continue to use you and be loyal. And what do we mean by loyal? That even if the price is lower somewhere else, they perceive you in the highest way, that they will keep coming back for more. And that's what we need to work on when we're running a business, is that we need to work on our USP, knowing what it is, polishing it, and letting our client know so that they keep coming back for more.
Excellent. Very, very well put. I also think, Leslie, you have a camera to what's going on in our home, because you mentioned coffee. And in our house, there are so many brands out there that a person could buy and bring home. But my family knows there's one brand I'm very loyal to, whether it's on sale or not, and no other coffee will do. So it's just an excellent point that there are certain things that when it is a unique selling proposition, a unique product, yeah, people will come back and be loyal to that. I really like what you said about USP.
And it's not just products, by the way. We mostly think of products, but services too. And that's how we have to aim to keep on improving our services and letting our clients know, because sometimes a product is easier to be pitched as a USP, less so than a service. Often it's more difficult to show your USP in a service and what differentiates you.
Right. Good point. Excellent. Thank you. You know, anyone who attends your events in person or online knows that you're a big proponent of a strong elevator pitch. So let's talk about that. Why do we need a good elevator pitch? What is an elevator pitch? And if you could tell us about, this is in your book, so if you could tell us about the four parts to a great elevator pitch, that would be great as well.
So firstly, let me explain to everyone, people that may not know what an elevator pitch is and what the name and where it comes from. So you imagine that you're in an elevator with somebody and you have 30 to 60 seconds to tell them who you are or what you do or why they should use you or your services or your products. So that's where the idea came and the wording came from, elevator pitch. Now, elevator pitches can differentiate and differ according to whether it's formal, like you're in a networking event, whether it's online, offline, and people in business are used to using an elevator pitch. Or I also call it an elevator pitch, which is why you need to know what you want to say. Imagine you're just walking in the street and you're bumping into an old friend and they say, "Oh, Heather, great to see you. I haven't seen you for ages. What are you doing these days?" And Heather will either know what she's saying or she'll be a little bit tongue-tied and say, "Well, I'm doing this. So that's the whole idea of an elevator pitch, is that you've thought exactly of what you want to say in a very focused 30 to 60 second pitch. And it's especially used for business owners because of the whole idea that we speak about with the elevator. So what is it all about? If you're in the elevator, the door's going to open any second, so you need to be focused. So number one, one needs to keep it short. Number two, once you just practice just the first couple of words, and you want to obviously make it as natural as possible, not that you're pushing a button and recording and planning what you want to say. But if you want to just use the first couple of words in terms of starting off your sentence, then the rest will naturally flow. And it's something that you do need to practice. So now that I've explained what an elevator pitch is, basically it's divided into four elements. So some people actually do a little bit of a different elevator pitch and they ask a question in the beginning to gain attention. Or once people have got the attention, and this is more in a formal networking setting rather than if you're just bumping into somebody in the street, then you can start saying the next bit what I'm going to say. So obviously is introducing yourself, your name, your full name, of course, and some people make the mistake of saying, "Hi, I'm so-and-so," but just their first name and they don't say the second name. It's something that you want people to remember their name, and even sometimes repeating your name. "Hi, I'm Leslie Kaplan," and some actually say their name at the end too. So the first part is your name, type of business. Then it's, what do you do? And we spoke about what problem you solve. So here too, you don't want to just say what you are. You want to say what you do, who you assist, who you guide, who you empower, whose problem you're solving. So those are the first two. The third is how you solve their problem, okay? And the benefits, why they should use you. It's actually easy. It may sound complicated, but it's actually very easy. And once you just put it into a sentence and just tweak a little bit, it comes naturally. And the fourth part is why somebody would want to work with you, or what type of clients you're looking for, if it's in a networking forum, that they can then know what type of clients they can refer to you. So very simple. It's literally writing down each thing and then putting it together to make it sound natural and focused. And just one thing I would like to add, there are many business owners around that have more than one type of business. And I found, especially with the networking groups, and as you know, many others maybe listening to this podcast know, for well over 10, 12 years now, I've been running various networking groups online and also in person. And what often happens is people come and they give a great elevator pitch and then they ruin it by saying, oh, and I also do this. So then you've lost people. Then they're not focused. They don't know what you're doing. So focus on one thing and even change your elevator pitch from time to time so that it doesn't get stale, that it sounds more interesting, adapting it, also, of course, to your target clientele.
Wow, that is so fascinating. We could do a whole conversation just on the elevator pitch. But I also want to just also spotlight something you said about practicing. That can't be understated. It's really important to practice it so that it's always in your back pocket, right? If you happen to be impromptu in a conversation in the store or in an elevator or wherever you are, it'll be practically something you've memorized or you can tweak easily in a conversation. So these are great tips. I appreciate that.
And stand in front of the mirror. Stand in front of the mirror and smile. And practice yourself saying that. You don't need to do it forever. Just do it in the beginning and then it'll come naturally.
Awesome. Good. So let's look into the third section of your book, which is called Strategy and Strategic Planning. I am especially fond of an idea that you raise on page 133 about creating a buyer or customer persona. So if you could tell us some of the questions that we can ask ourselves when we are segmenting our target market.
Firstly, as I said, one of the things that many business owners make a mistake with is that they have a great idea, they start up a business, they're passionate about it, they consider themselves an entrepreneur, but they don't fully investigate their target market or clientele and do good, what we call market segmentation, to determine who the client is. A lot of people, new business owners in particular, will say, yeah, everybody is my target market. So if somebody says everybody's their target market, they are likely, I don't want to say to fail, but they're likely to not be targeting their specific market well enough. And it basically has implications in every single aspect. So when I talk about creating a buyer or customer persona, what I mean is before we can market to them, we need to know every single thing about them. We need to know their demographics, their age. Am I marketing only locally? Am I marketing internationally? Am I marketing to a certain psychological graphic, to a certain type of person? What are their interests? What are their beliefs? What do they eat, dream, sleep about? What, you know, everything about them, literally getting into their heads to know what your client thinks about. Because only once you can literally get into their heads, in inverted commas, can you know how you can serve them best and what problem and how you can solve their problems. So that's super important because today there is so much competition in the business world. If you take almost every profession, you have dozens of competitors. So a lot of people can say, well, it's great if I've got competitors because it means that there's a market out there for my product or service. However, we want to be able to best reach our target market. And here I talk about also primary and secondary clients. So the primary one is the person directly using your product or service, which you need to know their buyer or customer persona. And the secondary one is someone else who may come across your services or products and will then refer you to that primary client. So here too, when we talk about marketing, if we don't know exactly what our client is wanting, then how are we going to be able to market to them? And if I can just add here, in the chapter two, I talk about the six strategic business questions that we need to ask ourselves when we're starting a new product, a new service, when we are an existing business, but we want to expand into a new market or add on to any of our services. So if I can just mention that it's the six basic issues, six questions, the why, what, who, how, where, when. The why, what, who relates to your strategy. And that is basically knowing, once you've answered who exactly your client is, what strategy are you going to use to get to them? I've ascertained how they eat, how they sleep, what their problem is, and where and what their problem is. And then the last three, the how, where, and when, is more the tactical side. So the tactical, and I see it even today, I saw it on a Facebook group where somebody was asking for the best platform to try and reach their clients. So before you jump into that, that's the second part. You've got to know exactly who your client and your buyer persona is. The first three questions, the why, what, and who, and only then you can get to the next three. And that's a mistake that literally hundreds of business owners, maybe even thousands, make, is that they tackle the second part first instead of the first part, and instead of knowing exactly what it is about their clients and how they can adapt their services and products to them.
Interesting. May I just ask you, from your experience, why do you think that that is? Because I'm going to venture a guess. I think that when a person, an entrepreneur, thinks very, very broadly when they're starting out getting something to market, maybe they just don't want to lose market share. Like, they don't think there's enough of a market share for what they want, and they're not ready to niche because they do want to just get clients. You know what I mean? But from your experience, why do you think this is the case sometimes when people make these mistakes that you're talking about?
Right. So good question. So firstly, I think there is a lot in business that is a trial and error. And if you look at many business owners that you know, or even companies, you know, we talk about this thing called the mission statement. And every company, whether you're even a solopreneur, has to have a mission statement, which is literally your guiding light, guiding you into the different activities that you're going to undertake or not undertake, things that you're going to compromise or not compromise on. Okay, so that's number one. And very often, companies over the years, even very large companies, change their mission statement. They change their area of expertise. They change the target market they want to work with. Things that happen in the environment also affect this. Things like COVID, let's take that for example, which on the one hand, so many businesses suffered. But on the other hand, it opened up so many opportunities for other people because it got them to think, you know, out of the box. So if you take, for example, with COVID, somebody may have said, well, my target market is only working with someone locally. But then suddenly, with the whole advent of Zoom and the world opening up and becoming a smaller place, they were able to take on a greater and a larger target market, which they hadn't initially planned on working on. So in other words, they were less niched, you can call it that. So, you know, there's a school for and against the whole idea of niching, niche marketing. And there's books that are written about this too. But it's generally well known that you can have different niches, you can market to different niches. But what's important is to know that you can't always do a copy and paste for different target markets. In other words, if you say I'm working with target market, and actually that's one of the worksheets in the book, is that looking at the different target markets and how you're going to reach them and how you can market to them differently. So no one's saying you can only work with one target market. And as I said in the beginning, very much can be a trial and error when you're starting your business, or even not just trial and error, but that you change your passions, you change your desires, you see something different, new opportunities open up, like in the COVID. It's important to be open, to be flexible, but just to know that if you're marketing in the same way to everyone, that's likely going to fail. Because as we know, you can't market to target market one as you can maybe to two. There may be some things in cooperation and collaboration, but not everything. And that's often where the mistake is made.
Excellent. Great. I want to get more into some techniques that you teach about in your book, but I do want to pause just for a moment for our listeners that really want to succeed in business, succeed as entrepreneurs, but maybe they're a little bit intimidated, and there are business books out there and entrepreneur books out there. But for some people, it may feel like, oh, this is too academic, or I'm not much of a business person, or I don't know what I'm doing. When you pick up Leslie's book, you are reading and enjoying a book with written in a voice of somebody who's clearly cheering you on, who can help you find the confidence within you to carry out this vision for your business to the degree that you can. Great worksheets, great lists, things that you can do, but it's such a book that is so supportive. It's amazing that something that is on the written page is such a great resource that is also, it's as close to a person that you can get in book form, if you know what I mean. It's just written in such a nice, good style, very smart, lots of wisdom, and yet very personable and very encouraging. I really appreciate that about your book.
Thank you so much. Firstly, thank you really for saying that. And I'd just like to share a couple of things. Let me tell you how I got to even think about starting to write a book. As you may know, and many of our listeners, is that I've been in business now for 3 decades, where I've run a product and a service business. And then as basically a strategic business coach and goal achieving coach, I'm always there to cheer on my clients. And how did I get into that in the first place and then get to how I got to thinking about writing a book? I love reading. I devour books and I love learning and ongoing development. And I found this was already going back well over 15 years ago that I was reading books, and my passion is really for nonfiction books and development books more than for fiction. And that everything I was learning and reading, I wanted to share with the world. I wanted to share with other people, not only business owners, but also about self-development. Because when you run a business, especially if you're a business owner, sometimes you have a difficulty in separating your persona, you and the business, and you are the business, especially when it's a small business owner. So when you do that, is that the way that you can improve your business and become more productive, more successful, is by also working on your own self-development. The two are directly linked. So for me, it was super important because I love, you know, showing others and teaching and training others and sharing with others. And I love seeing people improve and processes. And I think you can probably feel the passion in my voice when I say that, because I'm super passionate about what I do. That's when I decided that I wanted to get more into the coaching and the training, because I really cheer on my people. And people have told me that. It's not just something that I'm saying. And that's when the idea came about then putting everything into a book, which is really a combination of my 3 decades of being in business, operating, as I said, both service and product business, and being able to help people make their businesses more successful. Because unfortunately, I've seen, and I do write this in the beginning of the book too, that I wish that I could tell you that you would always love being in business, because sometimes it's a love-hate relationship. And that's one of the things that I say too, to ask yourself, and that's part of the why did you get into business in the first place? Because if you happen to enjoy cooking, that's great, but it doesn't mean to start a cooking business. You know, it's very often the reason you got and started your business is often the reason why you start hating your business. So this is what I wanted to create. I wanted to create a book that would be an easy read, which talks about also self-development, and it starts off lighter. It talks about, you know, my business and I, that was the first part. It's divided into 9 parts and the checklists and the worksheets. And what was important to me is that this wouldn't be an MBA book that stays on the shelf. It's a toolbox and a guide, that it's something that you should keep next to you and to be able to use on an ongoing basis, and that it's very practical. Now, if somebody is feeling a little bit overwhelmed, I don't know if you want to get into that separately, if I can just mention that checklists, worksheets, tracking myself, everything, you choose which ones you want to work on first, like with anything else, okay? And you don't have to do everything. Like with any business decisions, we prioritize. So see what gels with you most, but it's an easy read. It's got lighter stuff, and it's also got some heavier stuff. So it's definitely got a little bit for everyone. You can either read it literally from cover to cover, or you can read the sections that are most relevant to you first. But the whole idea of the checklists and the worksheets, which is, I think, what differentiates this from many, many, and if we're talking and spoke about USP, what differentiates this book from many, many other books, and as we know, there's no shortage of business books on Amazon or on the bookshelves, The whole idea is that this is not just pure numbers tracking everything, not at all. It talks very much about life and identifying yourself and knowing yourself in order that your business can be more successful. And you can choose what to track first. It's not just the tracking, but it's also giving you ideas, giving you thoughts. Food gives you a lot of food for thought. And just one final thing to wrap up with that question is that when we want to make change, and if you're either satisfied with the way your business is going, but you know that you can try and improve it, become more productive, work better on your work-life balance, the only way that we can make change is by tracking things. And the only way we can track things is by actually analyzing and recording. So unfortunately or fortunately, it goes hand in hand because that's how it enables us to improve ourselves.
For sure. That's how you actually can be more mindful, is if you're actually tracking and giving yourself some accountability. I think that's very, very true. And also, I like how you mentioned self-development. Why not? It's part of our running our business. Self-development is very important. And I'd love to get to something from your section called time management techniques. Talk about self-development. There's a piece that just really jumped out at me on page 290, and it's part of a list, but one of the things on the list, again, talk about self-development, is an idea that you call to eat that frog. Now, I've noticed that this is a great piece of advice in business, but also at home or community service or basically any endeavor where we have a lot to do and a limited amount of time. So if you could tell us, what does that mean to eat that frog and its benefits? Obviously, frogs aren't kosher, but this tip certainly is.
Right. Okay. So firstly, it's important for me to note that I didn't coin the phrase eat that frog. The phrase was coined, and there's actually a book called Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, world-renowned motivational speaker and author. So what the whole concept is about eating that frog is because we're all so busy and there's just not enough hours in the day, or there could be more if we use ourselves in a more productive way and don't procrastinate, because of all these things. In this chapter, I mentioned various time management techniques, and the one called Eat the Frog is basically tackling the most important thing that's on our mind first thing in the morning. Because otherwise, what happens, as I'm sure many of our listeners will agree, is that we get bogged down with so many other tasks or things pop up that before you know it, it's the end of the day, and that major task that you had, you didn't do first. And then it basically weighs you down. So by taking care of the most important task first thing in the morning, basically clears your mind, clears your chest, and enables you to be a lot more productive because then you can tackle the other things after that. So that's the whole idea of it. And basically that your mind will be clearer, but you'll also know that you will have done that most important thing first. So that's what the eat the frog is. And if I can just add here too, is that there's different techniques. I'm not going to go into them all now, but in most cases, we land up using a combination of different techniques and not only one technique at a time, different things you can use for different activities. But the most important thing that I would just like to say is that there's a phrase called, what's the best or most important use of your time right now? And that's what we need to ask ourselves. And if it's a particular activity that you know you have to do, then go and eat that frog and do it first thing in the morning.
Right, right. I find that also the frog is something, it's important, but it may be something I'm dreading. So if I can at least get that done first, not only because it's the most important, but if it's something I'm dreading. So this is where the character development comes in, is that I feel very proud of myself, at least, like it's very emboldening that I got that done. And it just puts me in a better mood for the rest of the day also to do that thing that you kind of dread.
Totally. It empowers you. It enables you to be more successful with other elements in your day. And yeah, it's something that you're either often dreading for whatever reason. Maybe it's somebody you have to approach. Maybe it's a task that's a little bit complicated. So whatever the reason is, try tackle it first thing in the morning. Eat that frog.
Got it. You know, your book, Leslie, is just chock full of worksheets, exercises, and lists. And I'm wondering if one of these is something that you fill out or think about often in your own professional life. I know it's hard to pick a favorite, but maybe there's something these days that is really speaking to you of your own worksheets or exercises or lists.
So firstly, I will add, and not everyone that we know is into lists and worksheets and checklists. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, that some people may be kind of scared off from it. But what I can just say is that there's over 25 worksheets and checklists, which is a big part of the book. And that was like the main, as I said, reason for making this a practical book, to make it easy, because only by analyzing and asking ourselves questions will we get to be able to advance ourselves and our business. So start off with the ones that you feel mostly apply to you and to your different situations. Some are lighter, some are a little bit heavier, like with KPIs and key performance indicators, actually tracking and monitoring. And some of them you're going to have this aha moment, like, wow, I didn't think of it. So the order of the worksheets is basically in order of the chapters. And the book builds up as well. It starts off very light and then it gets into more detail. And then it also ends off with, in fact, the part is called part 9 on a lighter note. And then we have the worksheets. So in terms of some of my favorites, as I said, because I'm so into self-development and also goals and goal setting, and obviously the numbers are super important, so that's something we have to look at. So some of my favorites are even the non-number ones, such as the client loyalty worksheet, what we can do to improve ourselves and make our businesses better so that our clients benefit more. Another one that comes to mind, there's one on customer-centric service checklist and worksheet, which that is actually a two-page one, that everyone says, I focus on the customer and my activities are, but we go into a whole lot of detail of, are you really focusing on the customer? Because at the end of the day, if we're focusing more on us and not on them, then we're not going to be, number one, serving them adequately. And number two, we're not going to be as successful as what we potentially could be. So those are some of the ones. I love also there's another one called the Success Traits Worksheet. And I've used these in many, not only in my workshops and sessions and webinars that I run, but I use many, many of these myself. So that's why I'm very into numbers and tracking and just getting to think about things. And sometimes even if you don't write it down, although the whole aim, and we all know with goal setting that if you write something down, you have a much greater chance of actually achieving it. So likewise here, initially you can get to think of some of the checklists and the worksheets, but by actually writing it down and referring back, and that's part of our personal growth as well, is that initially when you read it, you may write something down, and then as you and your business develop, you may come up with something totally different, which is why I encourage you to write it down. In the print version, and this book is available in a print or a digital version. In the print version, on most of the websites, it's actually a blank page on the other side on purpose for you to write down your thoughts and write down your notes. So those are some of the things that I like doing. The checklist, my favorite. There's also another one on creativity and innovation, you know, and the difference between them. And it's not just the theoretical. They're all very, very practical that will get you to improve as a person and that will get your business to improve. That's the whole idea of them.
Amazing, amazing. So well-rounded. I really, really appreciate this conversation. Obviously, your book, I've been enjoying reading it so much. And yes, it is the sort of thing that I would dip into now and then as the need arises and to continue on with. And I really want to just thank you so much, Leslie Kaplan, for taking the time to talk with our listeners and me about your book, The Small Business Success Toolbox and Guide, How to Build and Brand Your Biz. Thank you so much for joining us on 613 Books Podcast.
Thank you so much, Heather. It's been wonderful being with you.
Leslie is dedicated to empowering individuals through courses and workshops on business and personal development. She facilitates networking groups and development forums, both virtually and in person. To contact Leslie Kaplan or to purchase your copy of Small Business Success Toolbox and Guide, How to Build and Brand Your Biz, head over to the show notes for this week's episode. And that's what's on the shelf for this episode of 613 Books Podcast. I'm Heather Dean. Thanks for listening.
613 Books Podcast is produced and hosted by Heather Dean. Senior producer and director of operations, Greg Cohen. Consulting producer, Iska Roth. Show announcer, Michael Doniger. Remember to like and subscribe to our show on your favorite app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your own preferred app, and never miss an episode. You can find all episodes of 613 Books Podcast by visiting our website, heatherdeanproductions.com.